I've always loved being on stage. There's always been something about, you know, being in front of people that I've never shied away from, even if it means me looking like an idiot. From a really young age, I've always gotten, you know, excited in front of crowds, and I've always put on shows for my parents. But my family thinks that there were different moments where I actually crossed the boundary between being a clown to actually being a professional performer. For instance, my uncle thought it was when I was a toddler.
I remember when you were still in diapers. We were in Fairmount Park somewhere, and music was on, and you were dancing. And people were watching because you were a toddler, of course, but you were really dancing. You recognized that people were watching, and I think that that spurred you on.
I also took a lot of inspiration from my dad, just because he was a musician, and I wanted to be a musician, even though if you had asked me that question, are you a musician, when I was a little kid, I would have been like, of course. Are you crazy? Of course I'm a musician. I'm a professional musician, because I was very confident. But he wanted to take advantage of that and get me up on a stage. So we formed this little band where I played drums and he played guitar. And the first show that we ever had was in his friend's basement. And I was so nervous and excited and anxious to be in front of people.
You just had this sort of like fierce determination to do the thing that you wanted to do in this way that is so particular to little kids. You kept a steady beat and would throw a couple of sloppy fills in every once in a while, and you kept a straight face for most of it, and it was great, and we all cheered and hooted and applauded and stomped our feet. And then afterwards, you were adored. You just ate it up. You were in a frenzy of adulation. It really was. You were running around and you were screaming and you were hitting people, and you autographed Andy Switzer's forehead, and I had to drag you off. You had a tantrum and I had to drag you off and put you to bed. There's a video of it on the internet.
No, don't tell everyone that.
It's not very long, but you can clearly see you stone-faced playing your little kid drum set.
At about the same time, you and your cousins started putting on plays. You were always writing things in the house, and I think that you were supported in doing that. But there's quite a bit of difference between, you know, acting silly and trotting out a play that you had just written about, you know, vampires and kitty cats in front of family, than getting in front of strangers and doing something similar.
One of the first performances that I wasn't completely supported in was in second grade, when I decided I was going to be in the school talent show. And I decided to sing The Awful Truth by Carole King, which is a song from the Really Rosie musical.
It's this really great sort of sinister, belted song about being Dracula's wife.
I was really excited and I worked really hard.
You had your godmother Mandy come over and give you vocal lessons on how to really project and use the power of your voice. And I made you a cape that was all silver, and it was silver on one side and black on the other, and it flowed really well. Justin found you the music to the song with just the piano accompaniment, and you rehearsed, and you were really good. You were so good. You had all these moves. You had this entire routine you were gonna do. You choreographed it, and it was spooky, and it was funny. It was just fantastic. I was so looking forward to your performance.
You pick something up with a high degree of difficulty to start off with, because that's in your mind kind of where your performance was. Timing is very, very difficult in that song. It was a really ambitious sort of thing to try.
And then suddenly it was the night of the talent show. And I was backstage with all the other kids that were in it. Everyone was so excited. There were, you know, little kids that were doing, singing, you know, Phineas and Ferb theme songs. And there were, you know, older kids doing magic tricks. And, you know, there were dance numbers and there were parents doing cute little things with their kids. So it was really fun and I was so excited. And they would call us up in groups of 10. And it was my time to go up. And I was probably the 10th person, and the girl in front of me, she was in my grade, and she said, "So you ready?" And I was like, "Yeah, I'm ready. I'm so excited. Are you ready?" She was like, "Yeah." And she said, "What music did you give them?" And I pulled out my CD with my music on it, my backing piano, and I was like, "Oh, I've been practicing with this. This is, you know, this is my music. I'm doing The Awful Truth, so-and-so." And she said, well, what did you give them? Did you give them that?" And I said, "No, I'm going to give this to them right before I get on stage." And she goes, "No, you were supposed to give those in at the dress rehearsal 2 weeks ago." And I said, "No, because I've been preparing. Like, they should have told me." They're like, "They did. They made the announcement." And I'm like, I don't remember that. Oh my God, what should I do?" And she was like, "It'll be fine. It'll be fine. Worst thing, you go out there without music." And my heart just dropped. And I was like, I can't do that. I've been rehearsing with this music. I can't go out there without music. So I had no choice but to just wait in line. And then suddenly I was the next person to go on stage, and I was listening to them finish. And I tried to hand the teacher, I won't name her, but she was very mean. And I tried to hand her my CD, and she goes, "No, that was at the dress rehearsal. You were supposed to give that at the dress rehearsal. You can go out there now without music, or you can go up not at all. It's your choice. I don't have time for this."
And they sort of pushed you off on stage with no music.
And I lifted the microphone to my mouth and I took a really deep, shaky breath. And, you know, if this were a Lifetime movie and I were an unrealistically attractive second grader that had been handpicked by, you know, casting agents, and I had a voice of gold, and the script said that I sounded amazing, then I would have sounded amazing, but this was real life, and I had just been pushed off on stage with no music. My entire plan for the past month had been shattered right there, and I had just been crying. And so what happened was I took the deep breath, and I sang the first line, and it sounded really, really, really bad.
And you were so scared, and your voice just shook, and you sort of stood there woodenly and sort of half attempted to furl your cape about a little bit, and you didn't move but 2 feet from the edge of the stage where they'd pushed you out. You didn't move from that spot. You sang from the side of the stage. And I think I cried. I think I cried as I filmed it, because I saw what had happened and I saw just how awful the experience was for you and how you had had such expectations, and to have them crushed like that. As soon as it was over, we rushed backstage and you were standing backstage and you were crying.
You didn't feel that you had done very well. You were very upset with yourself and you didn't feel that, you know, what you were doing was received properly.
But even as I was crying, I was blaming the teacher, and I was blaming the director, and I was blaming anyone but myself, which I guess I still do today. But the point was that there was no loss of confidence on my part. I was never in the state of mind where I thought, "I'm never going to go back on stage. That was so embarrassing. I'm so humiliated." I was like, "Let me get back on stage again so I can do that better and everyone can see how good I am." And I think that that performance really helped me realize that even if I wasn't good on stage, the point was to show people that I could be. The point was to make myself proud. But that didn't mean that I wasn't still really upset, so my uncle, my mom, and I think my godmother all came in and saw me crying.
And we came in, and I don't know what happened first. I think I just rushed up and grabbed you, and I said, "Oh, sweetie, what happened?" And through tears, you were like, "Miss Molesky! Miss Molesky wouldn't let me use my music!" And I think it was at that point that your uncle said, "That was fantastic." And he completely changed the mood in the room. He didn't let you focus on what had gone wrong, but instead put all this focus on what you had done right. He didn't even mention the fact that you didn't have music, because he'd never heard you rehearse. All he said was, "That was amazing. I'm so impressed with you." I watched what it did for your face and how you realized that you had done something kind of amazing. You had done it. You didn't run off stage, which is something that happened on that stage with four other kids. They would cry in the middle of their numbers and run off. But you didn't do that. You stayed and you did it.
That could have been a turning point for you. Talk about, you know, crossing over a barrier. It's not like you, I don't know, went off on a journey, went away to the mountains, hid yourself in a cave, and then came out as something, you know, you went from caterpillar to butterfly. I think the performer just kind of stepped forward.
And you know what? I still hear, whenever I hear that song, I think of you rehearsing it in the living room and just how amazing you were.
And then after that, it was pretty smooth sailing for me performance-wise. There were, some stumbling blocks, but they weren't huge or notable, except for one time that was recent. It was probably 6 or 7 months ago. I had a show at a bar, and I had blown my voice out about a week before because I had been at summer camp, and the summer camp was called Girls Rock Philly, and their whole sentiment was that girls are allowed to be loud. They were allowed to be, we're allowed to be noisy and take up space because a lot of the girls are younger and they need those kind of feminist mentalities to get them started in performance. And I loved it, but the thing was, since that was their whole, mantra, they had a lot of really loud cheers where you kind of scream them. And that took a toll on my voice, which is pretty dumb of me to scream at the top of my lungs when I had a show coming up. But for that whole week after I woke up and my voice was just like a squeak, I drank a lot of tea and honey, and I had tons of cough drops, and I didn't talk, which is really hard for me because, I talk a lot. And I tried really hard to get my voice back on track, but as soon as I went up on stage and I lifted the microphone to my mouth, I absolutely knew that my voice wasn't there, and this wasn't going to be a pleasant experience.
And the first song, you barely got through. It was rough to watch you do that. And then I saw your friends. Saw your friends rush up to you and hug you and comfort you and console you and encourage you. It might not have been a turning point for you. It was definitely a turning point for me, because I realized that you were getting to an age where you were building a community around you. You were building a support network of good friends, of people who could help you when you needed it. And it made me a little sad, but I was also very impressed by you and them.
I think that's the fundamental change, that shift in you to say, this is what I'm going to put forward, this is what I'm going to highlight. Let me say, when you make that shift, there are certain sort of tonal or qualitative changes that happen in your personality. When you make that shift and you move those things to the front and you decide, this is what of me I'm going to show the world, I think there are a lot of things that come with that, including confidence and a heightened ability to connect and to convey ideas and to communicate what's going on inside.
So, even though my life on stage and my life as a performer isn't perfect, and obviously it never will be, I think crossing those boundaries between, messing around and not really having a support system and trying things out for myself, it was crossed a couple times in my life, and I think I'll always be walking across it. I think it's a boundary that I'll be crossing my entire life. But now I'm closer to the other side. And I think that that's really important in my life, because performing is really important in my life. And I'm glad that I have such a supportive family, and I have such supportive friends. And I'm just so grateful for all the opportunities that I've had and will have to continue crossing this boundary for the rest of my life.